speakers and stuff like that, or participants?
Well, we've got in Santa Barbara, we got four or five, but I only have two cards yet. I think I may be getting some more cards. Nope, maybe not.
Ontario has four guests, one warden, and three speakers.
Monterey has no members of the public, but my Ridgeback is very interested.
That's that darn guard dog of yours.
Maybe that's why there are no members of the public.
Okay, and Sacramento has, I'm saying 15 to 20 people here in the room, and I have four speaker cards right now.
Okay, I'm going to call the commission meeting to order. I'm Jim Kellogg. I'm president of the commission from Discovery Bay. On the line from Santa Barbara, we have vice president of the commission, Richard Rogers, from Montecito. We have commission member Mike Sutton from Monterey, in Monterey. And we have commission member Dan Richards from Upland, and he's in Upland.
Ontario.
My paper says Upland. So who got the radio on?
The music.
That sounds like Dan
Richards. Is that
Richards.
You again?
That sounds like Dan Richards type of music.
Yeah. You know me better than that.
Can we,
Mike, are you on the line?
Yes, please. Yeah.
I think I
Mr. President, this is the Vice President. Someone is obviously trying to get us to begin meeting as fast as possible.
That would be AGT video, are you on the line?
Looks like we're on the hold. I think someone probably put us on hold that had called in.
AGT video, are you on the line?
You know, I agree with that,
Dan. Oh, here we go.
You had the music on the line, didn't you?
Sorry.
Okay.
You know, I must tell you, I had a different opinion, GP, until that music was there. Your music on hold.
Okay, I covered the commissioners. With the commission staff, we have our acting executive director, John Fisher, with us. We have deputy executive director, Adriana Shea. Is Craig here?
Yes, I'm here in Santa Barbara.
Okay. We have Craig in Santa Barbara, and we got Sherry Fombuena and Anita Biederman, Carol Horn, and Sandy Miles with us from our staff. We also have our Deputy Attorney General, Rick Fallhammer. We're blessed with the appearance of our Director, John McCammon. And we have Eric Loft with us today as well. And where's my warden list that I had here a minute ago?
Your warden list is right here.
And for wardens, we got George Paz and Kyle Chang.
They're in.
Tony Warrington and Rob Allen. So, and many, many more. But that, I think, covers all the staff people that are here. Commissioners, I am going to ask that you give me the privilege as president to move one agenda item up first, and I'll explain. That's because when we didn't have the August 5th commission meeting, we messed up a whole bunch of PLM holders who were unable to start when they were supposed to, hunting on her property for deer. So I would like to move the consent calendar up as the first item today and take action on that so we can get that over with and those guys can catch up with all the rest of the people that we've done previously. Is everyone okay with that?
I'm okay with that.
Roger's okay.
That's fine. I actually do have a speaker card here in Monterey, after all. One member of the public who wants to talk during public forum.
Okay. All right. Let's take care of item 9 right now so we can get beyond, and then we'll go to public forum, okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So we have on the consent calendar, this is John Fisher, we have the consent calendar involving POM operations, and one, I believe it's a lease renewal, and I think that's it on the consent calendar. Adrian, anything?
It's a lease extension until we get the lease template finalized.
So could I have a motion for agenda item 9 pertaining to the consent calendar, please?
Excuse me.
So moved.
Wait a minute. Consent calendar is items 10 through 13.
Okay.
9 through 13.
Yeah. Okay. I got
actually through 13.
Did I get a second?
I'll second it. But what's the number here, Jim? I'm not sure.
It's item 9 through 13, I think. 9 through 12. I was listening to our legal counsel. I didn't want to change what he said. So item 9 through 12, Dan.
It's 10 through 12, isn't it?
No, 9's on the previous page, the bottom of the previous page.
I have a question. Okay. I also have a question about agenda item number 9, Mr. President.
Thanks.
That's a renewal of an extension just till we get things shook out.
Okay.
That the subcommittee's been working on.
That was my question. Thanks.
We're doing an extension on 9 and approving 10, 11, and 12.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. I'm good with that, and my second's good with that.
Okay. Well, because we're on conference, we'll have to do a roll call.
Mr. President, we have public comment on that.
On that?
Believe it or not.
You guys.
Okay. Let's hear public comment. I'm sorry. I should have called for that before we... called for a motion.
Go ahead with the public.
Go ahead, public comment, Donna.
Okay, Mr. Weeklin.
Commissioners, Paul Weeklin.
What agenda item is, pardon me, what agenda item?
9.
Okay. Go ahead, Mr. Weeklin.
Commissioners, Paul Weeklin. Here you go again. At the meeting of May 5th, you extended the leases on High Island Oyster Company, Marin Oyster Company, and the Point Reyes Oyster Company. Those have still not been, the outcome is unknown to the public. And here you go again with another extension of an extension of the Grassy Bar Oyster Company. We see that there's some shenanigans going on, and you are not ready after the May 5th for 180-day Marin Oyster Company, Hog Island Oyster Company, Point Reyes Oyster Company, now the Grassy Bar Oyster Company. The public has asked many times to see how the profits of these companies are weighing out the benefits to the citizens of California. Some of these leases are 5 to 25 years long. I only wish I could renew my commercial fishing license every 5 years. Wouldn't that save a lot of time and effort, paperwork for the department? A great savings would be there. It would be par. It would be equitable and fair to allow such a thing. Now, these aquaculture companies, we know how they make a profit. It's from their investors. This is another Ponzi scheme. Ooh, ooh. Want to buy some shares in an aquaculture pyramid? How about some shares in a mariculture Ponzi consortium? We know it's not nice to fool with Mother Nature. But here you are, bending over backwards again for your friends in the aquaculture industry. It is not right. We need to have some finality here, and the public needs to be aware of how these companies are faring in the open market. Thank you.
That's it? Okay, I'm going to move forward with our shenanigans and have a roll call vote.
Okay. Consent calendar items 9 through 12. Commissioner Sutton?
Aye.
Commissioner Richards?
Aye.
Commissioner Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
President Kellogg?
Aye.
It's passed 4-0, unanimous vote. For the record, I did not get who made that motion, so if you would give me the...
Rogers.
Thank you. Okay, so we've passed the consent calendar.
Get the second on that. Get the second.
Yes, I have the second. Thank you. My understanding is that department personnel are ready to notify the PLM operators. So we'll get that going right now. License and Revenue Branch is going to be listening in and able to do that. Mr. President, you want to go to public forum?
Go to public forum.
Public forum, any member of the public may address and ask questions of the commission. As you know, this should be on items that are not on the commission agenda. The commission cannot take action on items that are not on the agenda. At the direction of the commission, staff may be requested to follow up on items, and submittal of written comments is encouraged to ensure that all comments will be included in the record of the commission. I have two speaker cards on the public forum here. I'm sorry, I have three speaker cards on the public forum here in Sacramento. Mr. President, I'm going to ask how many speaker cards we have elsewhere, but I'd also like to know how long public comment in the public forum.
Well, we'll go 3 minutes.
3 minutes, okay. So the public forum will be three minutes per speaker. Do we have any speaker cards in Santa Barbara?
Two.
Two, okay. Speaker cards in Monterey?
One.
One. And Ontario?
Two with one seated, so 6 minutes for one.
Okay. Mike, does your dog speak on command?
Well, he forgot to fill out a card.
Okay.
I know, it was just a paw print.
Okay,
that's right.
So we can proceed with public forum. Okay. We'll start with the cards in Sacramento and then go to the other offices. Mr. Rob Ross, California Aquaculture Association, followed by Noel Crane, followed by George Otto. Mr. Ross.
Thank you, Mr. President and members of the commission. I'm Rob Ross. I represent the California Aquaculture Association, requesting that due to our information that you won't have a full complement of commissioners at the September meeting, to put an item over that may be on that commission agenda to October, and that item relates to the hatchery EIR. We might also use the time, if you were to accept our request, to work with the department on alternatives that we feel would not be as onerous and draconian to the industry and to the workers that we employ. Thank you.
Okay. Noel Kramers, followed by George Osborne.
Good afternoon. Noel Kramers with California Farm Bureau Federation. We would like to echo Mr. Ross's comments. Our members, both that produce aquaculture products and that use those in their stock ponds to stock aquaculture, could be impacted by the stocking permit, and they feel that it's important to have all of the commissioners present when that discussion happens, so we hope that that can be moved to October.
Are you guys able to hear all this okay out there?
Santa Barbara,
yes.
I'm good.
From the department's perspective on this issue, my understanding is that the EIR required the department to make a recommendation to the commission. If the commission defers it, it's purely the commission's duty. So
not a problem.
We've done our obligation to make that recommendation.
Okay.
Right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Thank you.
George Osborne.
Pardon me. George Osborne, representing the California Association for Recreational Fishing. Echoing the two prior comments and thanking the director. I had a very productive meeting with the department last week concerning this particular item, and we were told that the department wouldn't have a problem. They've expressed that to you, and we would appreciate moving the entire item that was on your consent calendar
number 27 in June to your October meeting, when you'll have a full complement of commissioners, and we thank you for your consideration.
What was number 27?
Pardon me?
What was number
27? Item number 27 on the consent calendar for June, stocking of aquaculture products. Thank you.
You know, it strikes me it's entirely possible that in October we will have a emphasis on full complement of commissioners.
Entirely possible.
Should we go?
Is that done with our speakers here?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we'll go to Santa Barbara first because they seem to have the most cards. Richard, we're ready for public speakers down there.
And Mr. Weakland?
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Once again, the majority of the public feels that the trust has been violated by the commission. There's a lack of confidence. We seem to continually have messengers of deception and half-truths. This aquaculture situation points it out explicitly. We talk about the stocking of aquaculture products, yet we have taken off the record. You have purged from the files, eliminated from the record, withering syndrome, the different things that have happened, the golden trout, the California golden trout, the inland state fish, has been put on the endangered species list and is going extinct because of the hatchery stocking, the interbreeding. We have found that in nature there is a mechanism that when too much genetic diversity is present, large die-offs occur. It's nature's way of cleansing and purifying itself of these unwanted hatchery hybrids. These things are not being explicitly talked about. You are shoving them under the carpet, and it is not right. Why won't you allow the truth to be known? Telling half the truth is like telling a whole lie. This whole thing is for investors. Oh, want to buy some shares in an aquaculture pyramid? How about some stock in a Mariculture Ponzi Consortium? It's not nice to fool with Mother Nature. And this guy Benninghoven, pulling a Benninghoven here, his votes that he made while a commissioner should be void and nullified. This is not right. This is a political maneuver that should not be allowed. Benedict Arnold Schwarzenegger and you henchmen are at fault. The public is not happy. That is all. We have another speaker in Santa Barbara. Is that?
Yes, and he'll have a difficult time following that. But Mike McCorkle.
I won't get manure mixed up with maneuver.
Yeah.
President Kellogg and members of the commission, this is Mike McCorkle, and I'm here today representing Southern California Trawlers Association. As you commissioners know, SB 1459 gave you the power to open additional areas for halibut trawling in California. So we're asking to be put on the agenda for October meeting would be fine, or any meeting of your choice would be fine, to talk about opening an additional area for halibut trawling. We will provide the commission with a brief in the next month on what we would like to do.
Question for Mr. McCorkle.
Mr. Sutton.
So, Mike, I take it you plan to submit a petition or a proposal to the commission with the specifics of your request?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Mr. President, I would suggest that we wait until we receive that to make a decision whether or not to put this on the agenda. Because I don't think that we have no basis right now to make any sort of judgment about the merits of that proposal. I'd like to see the proposal first and discuss it before we decide to put it on our agenda.
Commissioner Sutton, wouldn't you be interested in seeing this at the MRC?
I think that would be that's a good idea, to vet it first at the MRC and then make a recommendation to the commission.
So that's normally the position of the MRC, is to take things like this, discuss them, and then forward them to the commission for its thought process. If we're going to be conducting the function the way I think it's envisioned, that would be the way it would work.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I completely concur with that idea.
So do I. And then that's the way that we bring the hunting issues before the commission with the Altosser Committee's recommendation, and it makes sense to me. So.
Is it correct that the next subcommittee meeting is in October?
Yes, it's October 12th, scheduled for October 12th in Santa Barbara.
That's fine with us. Okay. Thank you.
So, Richard, have you got any other public speakers?
No, sir. We're done.
Dan?
Yes?
And Colton, have you got public speakers on this item?
I do in Ontario. I have...
What did I say? Colton. Okay.
Yeah.
Would you run over to Colton and have him respond?
How about Sam Berdue? Let's not forget that.
I'd rather run up to Santa Barbara if I've got to do some running around.
Boy, it's beautiful today.
I'll bet. I have one speaker here, two cards, one seated time. Joe Gulley, who is the superintendent, environmental scientist for L.A. County Sanitation District, has ceded his 3 minutes to Philip Fries, who is the department head of technical services for the County Sanitation District of Los Angeles. Mr. Fries, you're up.
Thank you, President Kellogg, commissioners, staff. Again, I'm Phil Fries, head of Technical Services Department for County Sanitation District of Los Angeles County. The sanitation districts are a regional agency that provides wastewater treatment and disposal services to approximately 5.7 million people in the County of Los Angeles. Sanitation districts operate an extensive wastewater treatment and disposal system, including ocean outfalls that are located offshore of the Palos Verdes Peninsula. We have a long history of comprehensive monitoring of the marine environment in this location. Throughout the South Coast Study Region Marine Life Protection Act implementation process, the sanitation districts have expressed concerns about the scientific validity and economic impacts to Los Angeles County residents associated with the proposed Abalone Cove and Point Vicente State Marine Conservation Areas in the Integrated Preferred Alternative. In particular, these two low-value marine protected areas would overlie the Palos Verdes Shelf Superfund site, protect low-quality habitats, and be in the immediate vicinity of the Sanitation District's ocean outfall system. The Sanitation Districts repeat our past request of the Commission to remove these MPAs from the Integrated Preferred Alternative. Today, I'd like to focus my remaining comments on the significant issues raised during the July 23rd CEQA scoping meeting in Long Beach and ask for the Commission's support in fully addressing these issues in the CEQA process and draft EIR. The Sanitation District submitted a detailed CEQA scoping comment letter to the Department of Fish and Game. I'd like to share with the Commission the major points that the Sanitation Districts believe must be addressed in the CEQA process and draft EIR. First, the department failed to identify the Palos Verdes Superfund site in the notice of preparation as required by CEQA statute section 21092.6. To comply with CEQA requirements, the department should reissue the notice of preparation so that responsible and trustee agencies can give this consideration in their scoping input. Second, a complete baseline characterization of the Palos Verdes Shelf should be performed using water and sediment quality data and studies compiled by the sanitation districts and the United States Environmental Protection Agency. The environmental baseline must also consider the immediate proximity of the existing ocean outfall system. Third, a full evaluation of the potential for increased health risk to wildlife and humans associated with placing marine protected areas within the Palos Verdes Shelf Superfund site should be performed. Fourth, a characterization of environmental impacts, including increased greenhouse gas emissions and power consumption resulting from additional treatment required to comply with new water quality standards likely to be imposed by a State Water Resources Control Board on MPAs should be performed. Last, evaluation of a new alternative proposal that consists of the integrated preferred alternative without the Abalone Cove and Point Vicente marine protected areas is requested. Such an alternative would avoid the potential for significant adverse impacts on the marine environment and important public infrastructure. The complexity of the CEQA analysis and number of affected parties for the South Coast study region is far greater than for the previous regions, and the Commission should encourage the department and their contractor to take the time required to ensure they develop a thorough and complete draft EIR. Further, once the draft EIR is available for public comment, the comment period should be extended beyond 45 days to allow the public and other affected entities sufficient time to review and comment on what will surely be a very large and complex document. Thank you for consideration of our comments, and we look forward to providing further assistance and information in connection with the preparation of the Environmental Impact Report for the South Coast Study Region MLPA project. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any comments or questions from the commissioners?
Yes, Mr. President, if I may. This is Rogers. I know the department is has been considering a response to all of this. John, is the department in a position to make any commentary at this point in time?
You know, there's been a lot of discussion about how to handle these outfall issues, particularly that are a concern on the South Coast. And I think we make some references to that in the document, the EIR document, which has been filed with the State Clearinghouse as of today, I think. But there are some additional pieces that are going to be out tomorrow, still allowing for the 45-day public review. Phil, I hope that these comments are included fully in your public comments to the public draft, because we address.
Yes, sir, they will be.
So the discussion has been about how to accommodate the outfall issue relative to the master planning document that governs how these things are administered, rather than dealing with it on an MPA by MPA basis. And I think pretty close to a clear understanding of how that's going to work. That'll be something that'll be brought back as a part of this process to the Commission for Action.
Mr. President,
if I may go a little bit further, because as we move along here this year, we're starting to press our ability to get this done in 2010 if we don't get at it. And I know you really, I didn't mean to suggest in any way you were not doing so. One of the things that strikes me as a concern is the potential for other state agencies to weigh in with requirements that were unforeseen by Fish and Game or by the BRTF MOPA process, and lay those requirements on top of LA County sanitation for their outfall. And that is not our intention, I know. Our intention, I know, is to write into whatever documentation we end up with on those sites the ability for the sanitation districts to continue operations as they have and not be encumbered by the nature of the MPA. However, anyone eventually in some other state agency would like to see it to further their own agendas. I'm a little concerned about that. To what extent, John, are you comfortable that we would be able to craft language that would make certain that what the department wanted to accomplish here with these particular MPAs in question would in fact come true?
That's certainly our goal, and we have had several meetings with the South Coast folks to try and address that, but it's all, I think, at least as far as I've been engaged, been on a theoretical. We haven't actually posited language, and we probably need to do that in the near term.
I would agree, John, very much so, because if my understanding is that it may be even the regional water quality boards, if not water resources control board staffs, that may be weighing in here and potentially causing significant question.
I'd also like to add that currently we're working on that draft regulatory language to ensure that is the goal, and that's what happens, and that will be published very soon, potentially in the next couple weeks. And also just wanted to let folks know that as Director McCammon indicated, the draft EIR is been released, and the current public comment period is from today through October, pardon me, October 4th.
Adriana, thank you. Let me just say one final comment here. I detect, my nose here is detecting the potential for an interagency brouhaha, which we have seen before. And so whatever we do here, we need to be as absolutely certain that we're going to be able to accomplish this, because the cost of not accomplishing this, voting in the MLPA for the southern region, and then having the sanitation districts be faced potentially with something that could be upwards of $1 billion in costs, is inappropriate in the extreme.
Absolutely, we agree with that, and that's why we've chosen the mechanism of the master plan, which governs the overall policies of the NPAs, as the mechanism to getting a waiver for that potential.
And Mr. President?
Yeah, Commissioner Sutton, you've been pretty patient. It's your turn.
Thank you. Just two brief comments. First of all, on this issue that Richard brought up, I sincerely hope that his concerns are unfounded. Certainly from a legal perspective, it seems to me that there is no authority in the MLPA for other agencies to weigh in and try to accomplish their own agendas. The State Water Board, of course, has its own authority under the Ocean Act and other statutes to limit discharges and regulate discharges, and they've been doing that quite independent of the MLPA. So I hope that this concern is unfounded. Secondly, I'm a little bit taken aback at the sanitation districts objecting to marine conservation areas. I thought that their concerns were pretty simple, that they did not want state marine reserves overlaying areas in which they have outfalls and so forth. That's a legitimate and understandable concern, because the department couldn't permit the maintenance of infrastructure in a state marine reserve. Well, we've developed a workaround for that. State marine conservation areas, the regulations are more lenient, and the state has more authority and flexibility to permit the maintenance of sewage outfalls and so forth. But now we hear that the sanitation districts are objecting to state marine conservation areas. I'm not sure why, frankly, and maybe I didn't listen to the testimony well enough, but I'd like to think that the sanitation districts were behind the spirit and intent of the MLPA and aren't just trying to obstruct what the department and the commission are trying to do here. But I need to have a better understanding of why the sanitation districts would object to a state marine conservation area where the department has full flexibility to permit them to do what they need to do with their infrastructure.
Commissioner Sutton, I agree completely with your comments. I was raising the issue to make our vote and the resulting program as bulletproof as possible.
Indeed.
Hey, Mike, would you hear from the sanitation district folks?
Well, I'm sure we will hear from them in great detail later. I'm just raising the question now. We don't need to debate it now necessarily, unless we have time. I'm in the president's hands here, but at some point, I'd like some clarification as to why the sanitation districts would object to a designation that would give the department the flexibility to let them do what they want to do. Anyway, I must be missing something here, but that's not unusual.
You know, I think that debate would be better off in person, Commissioner Richards.
I agree.
That's fine. Yeah. They're ready to answer that, but if you'd rather have it later, then that's fine.
Just an encouragement, this is John McCammon from the department, that Phil, you and your folks make sure that all this is on the record in the CEQA document.
Did you catch that?
Yes, sir.
I did catch that.
Okay. So, Commissioner Richards, have you got any more public testimony from Ontario?
I do on item 2, 3, and 7.
Okay, but not on this. Okay. How about you, Commissioner Sutton? Have you got speaker cards on this item?
Sorry, Mr. President, were you calling for public?
Have you guys any speaker cards on this item?
Yeah.
Yes, we do have one.
On public forum? Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, it's your turn.
Okay.
Okay. Good afternoon. My name is Lisa Vonik of the National Marine Sanctuary's West Coast Regional Office, and I'd like to read a statement on behalf of Maria Brown,
superintendent from the Gulf of the Farallones National Wing Sanctuary. On August 10th, the Gulf of the Farallones National Wing Sanctuary sent the commission a letter requesting technical corrections for the North Central Coast MLPA region. A technical error regarding the geographic extent of the seasonal Southeast Farallon Island special closure was brought to the attention of the sanctuary by the shark ecotourism community. The error is as follows, and this is all laid out in the letter. The final environmental impact report describes the boundary of the seasonal closure from December 1st to September 14th at the Southeast Farallon Island as two distinct areas. One, from East Landing to southwest side of Saddle Rock, and two, between Fisherman's Bay and East Landing. The final environmental impact report was subsequently mistranslated in the initial statement of reasons and the final regulations. We found that the boundaries in the second area were omitted and instead packaged as part of the year-round closure. The new map issued by the department in July depicts the Southeast Farallon Island special closure as described in the regulations. However, the sanctuary found that this area was originally proposed as a seasonal closure as depicted in the draft and final environmental impact reports as a seasonal closure. Our letter provides the maps and documents that support this finding. Additionally, sanctuary staff participated in the regional stakeholder group and do not recall any changes to these maps when they reached the commission. Furthermore, we have been unable to obtain a written record of any documents that can explain the change from a seasonal closure to a year-round closure. Again, our conclusion is that this was a simple error with a simple solution. Therefore, the sanctuary requests that the Fish and Game Commission initiate a technical correction to the initial statement of reasons and subsequent regulations to include a seasonal closure from December 1 to September 14 for the area between Fisherman's Bay and East Landing. And the time to do this is now. We moved as quickly as we could to notify the commission, and we urged the Fish and Game Commission to take swift action to rectify this error and request that the commission place this item on the agenda at their September meeting. Thank you.
Hey, any questions or comments from the commission on that? Any other speakers in Monterey, Mike?
Negative.
Okay. Okay, that includes item one on the agenda. We will move on to item two, and Mr. Fisher will tee that up for us.
Okay, agenda item two. This is discussion and possible adoption of proposed changes to Section 300 of Title 14 regarding upland game bird regulations. By way of background, at the Commission's May 5th meeting, staff was authorized to publish notice of intent to amend the upland game bird regulations in Title 14. That notice was published, and we received public testimony at the June 24th meeting. This is the meeting to take additional public testimony and for you to consider adoption of these regulatory amendments. Dr. Eric Loft with the Department's Wildlife Branch is here to give an overview of this. I call your attention to some after-meeting correspondence that is in the material that we sent out to you on, I believe it was August 11th, and that has some information on sage grouse materials. Dr. Loft?
Thanks, John.
I'm sorry, Eric. Before I go on with that, we do have one public speaker here, and after Dr. Loft speaks, then we'll take public comment.
President Kellogg and Commissioners, Eric Loft with the Wildlife Branch, thank you. I did want to update you and give you a sort of a status view, a review on where we are with the sage grouse proposal, and a reminder that early in 2010 we came to you with our proposal, and there had been a recent decision by the Fish and Wildlife Service to designate sage grouse as warranted but precluded from listing. And you'll remember that in our initial statement of reasons for regulation change, we had put in a range of zero to the current levels of hunting for sage grouse in the four zone or four areas in which we hunt sage grouse in particular. What had has happened over the intervening months and started to come make us become more aware of some of the information that was coming in on the actual LEC counts of our subpopulations of sage grouse starting in May and then concluding in July, caused us to request the specific data from our regions and begin to take another hard look at what the data actually said as we came forward with our recommendation. I'll remind you that over the years, the department has significantly reduced sage-grouse hunting in the late 90s and again a few years ago. And in fact, our hunted populations have been largely stable to increasing, and populations that are in declining state, we do not hunt them now, and in fact, you don't hear about them because we don't propose them to you for hunting. So we've already had significant reduced sage-grouse hunting over the past decade. The hunted populations, again, have been stable to increasing, and we've instituted no hunting in areas where they are significantly down, and we believe that's largely due to habitat conditions. So what you had most recently provided to you was our analysis in July of the raw data by each of the hunt zones, and that's sent to you in a memo from the director dated July 29th, and I think that's the one that John Fisher is referring to, where we've revised our recommendation, and we've done it to more appropriately and specifically focus on what the data says and what the population information tells us. And what that tells us is that for three of the four zones, we recommend no change in the hunting proposals. That would be East Lassen, we would recommend 20 permits. North Mono Unit, we would recommend 25 permits. And in the South Mono area, we would recommend 35 permits. The one change that we would make is in the Central Lassen Unit. That unit is about one-third the numbers of adult birds in the LEC counts as the other three units, and we initially in this memo have five permits recommended. We actually would recommend to you zero permits for that to be within that range. And that would allow us to do as much as we can, even though we do not believe hunting is the factor that controls these animals, to provide every opportunity for increase. So with that, again, I would refer to the memo where we provided the initial recommendations in our update as to why the data by the zones, zone-by-zone data, indicated substantial increases by as much as 48% in 1 year to near record highs for the populations. And again, we've stopped recommending hunts in areas where the population goes down, and so that actually isn't even an issue, and you don't see that information coming. So with that, I think I should add too, we also looked at other Western states and how they were handling sage-grouse this year, given the federal designation, and most of them, based on our analysis or querying of those folks in other states, is that most are holding steady. None, to my knowledge, are increasing. I'm looking at Scott Gardner, our sage-grouse expert. Scott Gardner's here to answer any technical questions if you have any. None are increasing the hunting opportunities for sage-grouse, but none are shutting them down either. And additionally, we've also got the Fish and Wildlife Service are even sponsoring some hunts. For example, Sheldon National Wildlife Refuge in northwestern Nevada is sponsoring sage-grouse hunts this year. So we're actually being quite consistent with all the other states in terms of where we're going with our proposal here, with the exception of being extremely conservative with that Central Lassen subpopulation. And with that, we take any questions if you have any.
Hey, before we do that, let's go to public comment and hear from the public.
One speaker in Sacramento, Mr. Dan Taylor. Mr. Taylor.
Good morning, President Kellogg and members of the commission. I'm Dan Taylor with Audubon, California. We did communicate with the commission in June our concerns about sage-grouse harvest in California. We've been actively monitoring the national policy debate on sage-grouse, and we're obviously quite concerned with the status of the species. As we know, the Fish and Wildlife Service has indicated that it deserves to be listed as an endangered or threatened species, but it's simply waiting its turn during due to workload involving other species. So that does cause us to be concerned. We did communicate with the department and the commission that we believe that the permit system should go to zero. Mindful of the fact that we do not claim that hunting is a primary cause of the reduction in sage-grouse numbers, we understand that there are larger habitat issues at question here, but given the fact that we've gone from millions of birds to a couple hundred thousand at most throughout the range, that it made sense to manage and to reduce all controllable risks. I will say I look forward to the chance for public review and have our scientific team review the memorandum that Dr. Locke referenced, because as I came to the meeting today, it's my understanding that the regulatory language for both East Lassen, Central Lassen, North Mono, and South Mono was to reduce the number of permits to zero. Perhaps I'm missing a key piece of information here, but our position to you is that we believe that this is a time to be cautious and prudent, and that if a species is through the eyes of the National U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service deserving of endangered species protections, the idea of a hunting program seems a little bit optically wrong. And so we look forward to reviewing that memorandum, working with the department on this issue going forward. Thank you.
Thank you. That's
it for here, Mr. President.
Okay. Santa Barbara, do you have any public speakers on this item?
No, sir, we do not.
Ontario, do you have any public speakers on this item?
Yes, I do. Bill Gaines with the California Outdoor Heritage Alliance. Bill?
Yeah.
Mr. President, members of the commission, department staff, thank you for the opportunity to comment today. I'm here today representing the National Wild Turkey Federation and many of our other organizational member groups, and we are pleased to support the Department of Fish and Game's recommended upland game regulatory package in its entirety. I would like to thank the department staff for working with COOR membership and the TOSHA committee to take another look at the sage-grouse recommendations for this year and to revise them to allow for science-based harvest where populations are healthy and at or above their 10-year averages. On the downside, we are a little bit disappointed that the department documentation and recommendation today does not provide for the use of the 177 caliber pellet gun as a legal method of take for turkeys beginning with this fall season. We've been working with the department to try to get the 177 caliber pellet gun authorized for use for the past several months. We do have somewhat of a verbal commitment from the department that they'll work with us to allow for the 177 caliber pellet gun as a method of take beginning with the spring 2011 season, and we ask the commission to support our efforts to get that done. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bill.
I just wanted to clarify, the memo in question that we're talking about is a memo from the Department of Fish and Game dated July 29th, and as Dr. Loft indicated, there is one change to that, and that's the Central Lassen 2010 permits from 5 down to 0 is the department recommendation. So there seems to be some confusion over the memo.
Okay. Is that it for your public comments, Dan?
Yes, sir.
Commissioner Sutton, do you have any public comments on this item in Monterey?
No public comments, but I do have a question myself.
Go ahead.
I guess I'm still a little confused about the, I apologize for not having dug into it well enough, but the department originally came back with a proposal based on the status of this species of sage grouse for, as I understand it, no hunting this year, a zero quota. And now the department's come back with a revision to that, is that correct?
That is correct. The sage grouse.
I have to say that I'm sympathetic to the comments of Dan Taylor regarding the status of this species. I know the hunting community, and certainly the Outdoor Heritage Alliance, doesn't want to be shooting endangered species. But on the other hand, I think there's a tendency of the commission to follow the recommendations of the department, absent some compelling reason not to do so. I just want to make sure, Eric, you and your staff are satisfied that this species can withstand hunting pressure at all in California.
Yes, sir, Commissioner Sutton, very much so. And as we indicated
where we see problems, we have already stopped hunting in those areas for sage grouse. And in particular, you can look at some of the subpopulation data coming out of those areas. And even without hunting, they're still on the decline. Yet these ones that are in more favorable habitat, the hunting is not having that impact on them, and they're actually going up still.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And, you know, this is a situation we see in fisheries a lot, too, where we don't want to punish hunters and fishermen for the declines of species that have nothing to do with their activities. On the other hand, in some cases, the populations simply can't withstand any further mortality from any cause. And so sometimes we have to shut down hunting and fishing through no fault of hunters and fishermen, if you see what I mean. And I just want to make sure this isn't an example of that, where there really doesn't need to be any further mortality on the species in any part of their range. If they're continuing to decline, as you suggest, for other reasons, I guess my question is, do we really need to be contributing to that decline through additional mortality that we do have control over?
Well, and again, the question is, in the areas where we are proposing to hunt them, they are not declining.
Right.
Eric, I have a question that goes along with Mike's concern. While you're saying that the areas where you're proposing hunting are in fact increasing, and that gives you comfort, it would indeed give me comfort as well. But one thing I do not understand with respect to the habits of the sage grouse is that, do any of those areas provide spillover in areas that are declining?
Commissioner Rogers, I think the answer is no, but I'd like Scott Gardner, our technical expert, to answer that, if you wouldn't mind.
Scott, you want to? Biologically, it seems unlikely. Sage grouse continue to demonstrate very traditional movements. It doesn't seem very likely. They're highly traditional in their use of leg sites, of nesting areas, and in their seasonal migrations. We've seen them, for instance, in areas of Nevada that have been really nuked by wildfire, and they will continue to use those same leg sites and those same areas for several years. And there are numerous types of examples of that they continue to use the habitats that they previously used, even though those habitats may not be particularly suitable for them anymore.
Okay, just to buy into, for me at least, the way my mind works, to buy into Mr. Taylor's concerns, and some of those touched on by Commissioner Sutton, I would have to think that hunting in the area where they are seem to be a burgeoning population would in some way diminish the prospects for the recovery in the areas where the population is in decline. And what you are telling me is that that's not true.
Yes, essentially. We think that actually expanding and recovering sage grouse in California is going to require significant habitat restoration, which would be followed by us actually translocating grouse. And I think we look forward to that. We are indeed translocating them currently to the Clear Lake National Wildlife Refuge, which hasn't been hunted in decades.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions or comments?
I just have one question. This is Dan in Ontario. Eric, how many sage grouse are we talking about last year were taken in the whole state? What's the estimate of that?
Scott's got that, I think.
Yeah, we estimate that 55 sage grouse total were harvested statewide, even though we issued significantly more permits.
All right, and that's my understanding as well. So, good. Thank you.
Okay, we've got a. If you guys are ready and have no further comments, we have a suggested motion that Executive Director Fisher will read to us.
Move that the Fish and Game Commission, pursuant to authority in sections 200, 202, 203, and 355 of the code, and to implement, interpret, or make specific those same sections,
will amend the Section 300 of Title 14 regarding upland game birds. In specific, this would involve the no-change alternatives for all of the sage-grouse zones except for Central Lassen, which would go to zero.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second that motion.
And that's Dan Richards in Ontario. Second it.
Okay.
We'll have a roll call vote.
Commissioner Sutton?
Aye.
Commissioner Richards?
Aye.
Commissioner Rogers?
Aye.
Commissioner Kellogg?
Aye.
Passed 4-0. We can go to agenda item three if you'd like.
Moving right along.
Okay, agenda item three, consideration of certification of final environmental document and discussion and possible adoption of proposed changes to the migratory game bird waterfowl regulations for 2010 and 11. This specifically involves sections 502 and 507 of Title 14. By way of background, the commission authorized staff to publish notice of intent to amend these regulations at the May 5th meeting. The commission took public testimony at the June 24th meeting in Folsom. The department has a final recommendation here in front of you, commissioners. It was put into the after-meeting binders that were sent out on August 11th, I believe it was. Dr. Eric Loft is here to talk about that, and before we introduce him, I'll have one speaker here, and I suspect we have speakers in the satellite offices. And then the other thing I wanted to say on this is that these recommendations come to you, commissioners, as quickly as humanly possible after the federal framework regulations are set in place in late July. And, Eric, if you want to expand on that, be my guest.
Commissioners, I would like to, at this point, turn this over to Melanie Weaver from our waterfowl program and Melanie's capable hands to explain to you the proposed changes that we've got coming this year.
Good afternoon, Melanie Weaver, the Wildlife Branch, and you should have in your packet a summary of the department's recommendations, including the status of ducks and geese. Just a couple of highlights. Our breeding pair population survey was conducted in April, and local mallards are up 22% over last year. All species combined in California are up 6%, but still a little bit below the long-term average. And looking at the fish and wildlife surveys in the Canadian prairies, which comprise a significant portion of our harvest, pintail are again up, which gives us the two-bird bag again this year. Greenwing up slightly, gadwall, widgeon, and shovelers are down. White-fronted geese continue to climb. They're over 650,000, and so we may recommend liberalizations on those next year. And as far as season lengths and bag limits, there are no changes for duck regs. However, we're trying to implement a five-day season for large Canada geese in the balance of state zone, and that's to address nuisance Canada geese in the urban and rural environments. Small change in the Northern Brant Special Management Area to begin on November 7th, which is a fixed date as opposed to, I think we had it last year as the first Saturday in November, and no other changes in lengths or bag limits for geese.
Okay, let's go to, you say we got public comment cards here. We'll start here with the public comments, if that's okay with everybody.
And Mr. Jim Waters in Sacramento, that's the only card I have in Sacramento. Mr. Waters, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President and Commissioners. On behalf of the Board of Directors and membership of Cal Waterfowl, we totally support the recommendations of the department. And I'd also like to specifically identify the hard work and professionalism of Dan Perigary and his staff, Melanie Weaver and Sean Olenberg. They've just done a great job in dealing with the Fish and Wildlife Service, the Pacific Flyway Council, and all the other folks involved. And we appreciate their work and look forward to working with them in the future.
Okay, you just brought up something that makes me have to ask. Is Dan okay? Because this is the first time I've been on the commission and he didn't do this.
He's on vacation.
Okay.
He's on a motorcycle.
You guys moved your meeting up.
That's cool.
And Jim, you're what happened to the new president of the California Waterfowl? How come he isn't testifying before us today? Is he afraid to come back to the?
I think he's trying to stay within the law for the first time in his life.
He happened to spend all day and last night with me, and he asked me to share with you guys his testimony.
I see.
Actually, I think there's a little bit of a legal issue with him coming before the commission.
For a year.
But we think on behalf of Cal Water Valley, he might work out. That's just my comment.
All right. Do we have any speaker cards on this issue in Santa Barbara?
No, sir, we do not.
Okay. And in Ontario?
Yes, sir, we do. Bill Gaines with the California Outdoor Heritage Alliance.
Thank you, Dan. Mr. President, members of the commission, department staff, my name is Bill Gaines. I'm president of the California Outdoor Heritage Alliance, and I am pleased to testify today on behalf of the California Waterfowl Association and Delta Waterfowl, two of our primary members and members of the board of directors of COA as well. And we are pleased to support the department's recommended waterfowl regulatory package in its entirety. And I can assure you we do not arrive at our decision to support this recommendation easily. In fact, this decision is based on months of coordination and collaboration with department staff, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, CWA's biological staff, CWA's board, as Jim Waters mentioned, as well as CWA's membership. In short, the public-private collaboration process demonstrated on reaching today's recommendation for waterfowl regulations is exemplary. And on behalf of CWA, I'd also like to thank Dan Perry, Gary, Melanie Weaver, and other department staff for their time, openness, and overall willingness over the past several months to work with us to reach the biologically based consensus package brought forward for your consideration today, and we strongly urge your full support. Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Sutton, do you have any speakers in Monterey on this item?
Negative, sir.
Okay, we have a motion for the environmental document first.
Yes, Mr. President. I can read that if there are no questions. Motion is that the commission certifies that the final environmental document for migratory game bird has been completed in compliance with the California Environmental Quality Act, that it was presented to the commission. The commission has reviewed and considered the information in the document. The certified document provides that there are no significant adverse environmental impacts resulting from the project. The commission finds on the basis of the facts in the record and the document that the projects and alternatives will have no significant adverse impact.
So moved.
Okay, I got a motion and a second. Who was that that made a second for the record?
Rogers.
Okay. A roll call on that motion.
Commissioner, sorry.
Aye.
Commissioner Richards?
Aye.
Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
President Kellogg?
Aye. Ayes have it, and that'll be the order. We have another motion that will take care of the 2010-11 duck season.
Yes, I'm going to read that to you, and we had two motions here, but I'm going to combine them and hope that it works out fine. Move that the commission pursuant to the authority by sections 202 and 355 of the Fish and Game Code and to implement, interpret, or make specific those sections and 356 hereby amend section 502 regarding the 2010-11 migratory waterfowl regulations. Commission is also going to amend Section 507 regarding provisions related to the taking of migratory game birds. The Commission directs staff to prepare a notice of determination consistent with the approval and adoption of associated regulations. The notice of determination will be filed with the Secretary of National Resources pursuant to Title 14 and Section 21080.5 of the Public Resources Code.
I so move.
Whatever.
I so move that motion.
Roger second.
Okay.
Roll call vote.
Roll vote.
Commissioner Sutton.
Aye.
Commissioner Richards.
Aye.
Vice President Rogers.
Aye.
President Kellogg.
Aye.
passed 4-0 unanimous.
Okay, moving right along, item number four.
Item number four, discussion and possible adoption of proposed changes to Section 29.80 of Title 14 regarding gear restrictions for saltwater crustaceans. In particular, this is recreational lobster hoop netting. By way of background, the Commission authorized staff to go to notice at the May meeting. This was scheduled for public testimony at the June meeting, but there was no members of the public to speak to this matter. Rob Allen from the Law Enforcement Division is to speak to this matter here, I think, a little bit today. And I just want to, Commissioners, call your attention to a letter from Josh Fisher. Bad name. From Josh Fisher, and he had some recommendations regarding mechanical hoop net pulling. Bob.
Yes, Commissioners, Rob Allen with the Law Enforcement Division. The main crutch of this regulation proposal had to do with coming up with a definition for hoop net, since we didn't have one in the regulations. And what we decided after public meetings with the constituents is to come up with a definition of two types of hoop nets and the parameters and measurements for those types of hoop nets in that definition. And the first one was to come up with a definition that kept the basic traditional type of hoop net that lays flat on the bottom, and when lifted, it entraps the lobsters, and it's lifted up, and the lobsters are removed from the hoop net. The second definition had to do with the new configuration type of hoop net that actually is more of a rigid type that has a large hoop at the bottom, and an upper loop or upper hoop that is approximately 10 inches off the bottom of the ocean, is supported and sits above the bottom hoop, with netting in between that actually more or less entraps the lobsters inside that hoop net, but still giving the ability for the lobsters to escape that mechanism. So we came up with a definition of what the existing hoop nets that are out there being used today, what they look like in that definition. The other thing that we recommended changed is that there be a two-hour time frame in the time that the fishermen are out there actually checking the hoop nets. And that will help us in determining the amount of hoop nets that are being fished by any certain individual, and also to keep nets from being abandoned. And it also gives us the ability to seize any hoop nets that are abandoned and floated in the water. The third thing that this proposal did was it asked that these new regulations become operative on April 1st of 2011, which gives a whole season of these changes to basically take place. The lobster season is set to open in October, and it will give the whole October, the whole 2010-11 season to take place, and the department can then notify the public on the changes, let the public know these changes are coming, so they have a year to get educated on this process and hopefully be in compliance the following lobster season. So that's what we have proposed.
Okay. We have zero public speaker cards in Sacramento. Robert, do you have any speaker cards on this item?
We have one in Santa Barbara.
Who might that be, Commissioner Rogers?
We have two in Santa Barbara. We have Paul Weakland and Mike McCorkle.
Okay. For the benefit of Mr. Weakland, since every time I've been chairman or president of this commission, I made it very clear that I'm not going to tolerate repetitious rhetoric that we hear over and over and over again, and that so far out of him, that's all that we've heard. I also made it clear that I won't tolerate somebody making personal attacks on any commissioners, present or past, like he did with Commissioner Benninghoven and the governor. And so I don't know if you have a warden there or not, but if that's what we end up with when he's speaking, I would ask that you just push the off button.
I will do so.
Thank you. Santa Barbara's public comments, please.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland. When a fishery is being observed like this, the situation and status should be fully and firstly promoted. How many fishermen are you talking about? Now that we have a lobster report card, these numbers are known, but you are still camouflaging them. Is it a failure, this lobster report card? And again, the effects of poaching on this fishery should also be the first and foremost things that are discussed. I say again that we should know how many fishermen there are because of the lobster report card, the failure or lack of success with this postcard, and what the effects of poaching are on these fisheries at the first possible return or the first status of any report on a fishery. Thank you.
Mr. McCorkle? Mike McCorkle, as a commercial lobster permit holder, I have two concerns that I don't see being addressed. They have been. To me, we've got a serious problem with hoop nets catching large female lobsters that aren't being caught in lobster traps because the funnels are too small and they can't get in. But they can be caught in a hoop net. And I feel that there should be a slot limit, and these large female lobsters shouldn't be allowed to be landed. The second thing is you now have mechanical pullers to pull these hoop nets. And what that's doing is allowing these guys to go deeper, but that's fine because lobsters move in and out, and if they want to go deeper, that's fine. But it also allows the hoop netters to pull commercial traps, and that's happening more and more and more. And there's a lot of hoop netters that respect the law, but there's also a lot of them after a few beers at night out hoop netting, and they see a few buoys around, the first place they go is go over there and pull those traps. And I feel that hoop netting as a sport should not allow any mechanical pulling of any hoop net. Thank you, Mr. McCorkle. We're done here then.
Okay. In Ontario, Commissioner Richards, do you have any public comments, speakers on this?
No, we do not, Mr. President.
And in Monterey, Commissioner Sutton?
Negative.
Okay. Any comments or questions from the commissioners?
We do from myself, Rogers. Is that all right, Mr. President?
Excuse me?
Is that all right?
Yeah.
Okay, the issue of mechanical pullers, I think, is a very important one, and actually, Mr. Wiesman brought up another point, which I thought was a very good one, too, and that is we don't know how many people are doing this. We say we have a lobster report card, but it's not, there is no electronic verification. I think the amount of report cards that are getting actually turned back in is, what, 20, 25% at maximum? Something like that. So we really don't, I think we genuinely do not understand how many people are doing this. My understanding is that there have been some people down in Southern California observed pulling 50 to 55 hoop nets in an evening, and you cannot tell me that that is a recreational event. So my sense of this is that the MRC needs to address this, and we need to address it as soon as we possibly can for implementation in the next season, not this one. And I agree with Mr. McCorkle that mechanical pullers allow somebody to pull a in addition to 50 or 50. That amazes me. I mean, I've got a hoop net on my boat, and I have a lot of success with the ones that I've got, and I get all the lobster I can legally take. So, I mean, I don't really understand someone doing that unless they're doing something illegal. So my sense of it is that mechanical hoop nets should be illegal, but I'm willing to address this at the MRC.
Okay, any other commissioners got comments or questions?
Mr. President, I agree. It's Sutton in Monterey. I want to associate myself with Commissioner Rogers' comments, and I think it's something we could easily take up at the MRC meeting in Santa Barbara.
Adriana?
Could I offer up a suggestion here in order to not duplicate work that is currently going on with the lobster FMP? Do you think it would be wise to perhaps make a request to the department to consider this issue in the FMP process.
I certainly agree with that, Adriana.
We can take it off the agendas for now and deal with it under that.
Well, but, Craig, I agree with that.
Just one concern, Adriana, and that is we don't know how long it's going to take the department to complete an FMP process. History suggests, experience suggests, that it can be a very long and involved and expensive process to initiate and complete an FMP. If there is, as the wardens have suggested, the need to impose regulations in the interim, I'm open to that. Rather than waiting 3, 4, 5 years, however long it takes for an FMP. So why don't we discuss it at the MRC, get some idea from the department of how they'd like to proceed, and then make a decision whether we need to regulate the use of this particular gear type while the FMP is in process.
I agree entirely, Mike, and so does Craig. Rob's concerns from the enforcement perspective, I think, are very valid, and we'd like to entertain all that at the MRC.
Very good. Thank you.
Can I make one comment, though, before we go any further?
This is Rob Allen again.
Rob Allen with enforcement once again. The comment based on that Mr. Rogers made on pulling 50 or 55, that in itself is illegal. There's already a regulation in there that allows five per person and no more than 10 per boat to be used.
Now, so Rob, I'm absolutely fully aware of that. The issue is that if we allowed mechanical pullers, you know, you can imagine the propensity for somebody to add more hoop nets. I mean, I realize that the enforcement is not thorough, and you're well aware of that, excruciatingly so, I imagine. And so I tie those two together, not whether somebody has excess hoop nets, but the propensity to have excess hoop nets.
Wasn't Commissioner Rogers with Ted Nugent in that video?
Hey, he's my God. Leave me alone.
Yeah, that, I mean, all the regulations in the world aren't going to keep those people from doing the wrong thing anyway, so...
No, Mr. President, they certainly are not. But if they can legally have a mechanical puller sitting on their boat, I just like to. Anyway, we need to look at this at the MRC.
Sure. Then make it your subcommittee top priority. All right, we're. I think we're done with that issue, so we can go item. We got to do our motion. So. Mr. Fisher will read a motion.
Move that the Fish and Game Commission, pursuant to authority in sections 200, 202, 205, 215, and 220 of the Fish and Game Code, and to implement, interpret, or make specific those same sections, plus section 206 and 220, I'm sorry, hereby amends section 29.80 of Title 14, dealing with gear restrictions for saltwater crustaceans.
Okay, I need a motion.
Mr. President, I thought we had agreed to defer this issue to the MRC for the time being, but maybe I misheard.
The issue of mechanical pullers was not part of this original package, so the recommendation is to move forward with these regulations as recommended and deal with the issue of mechanical pullers separately with
Thanks.
The package if necessary.
Thanks for that. In that case... In that case, I will. I'll make this motion.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll second it.
All right.
Richard.
Richard.
Okay. Okay. We'll have a roll call.
Okay. Commissioner Sutton.
Aye.
Commissioner Richards.
Aye.
Vice President Rogers.
Aye.
President Kellogg.
Aye.
Motion passes 4-0.
Now we will move on to item 5.
Number 5, receipt of public recommendations and possible action on department request to publish notice of intent to amend section 2720 et al. On Title 14 regarding recreational and commercial groundfish fishing for 2011 and 2012. It's my understanding that Marcy Uremko is in the Santa Barbara office. I hope that's true.
Yes.
And she's planning to give a presentation on this to you, Commissioners. So Marcy, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioners. Marcy Urenko with the Marine Region. Just want to bring you up to date on what took place at the Pacific Fishery Management Council meeting in June. The council took final action to adopt new recreational groundfish fishing regulations that will be effective in federal waters for 2011 and 2012. What we have in front of you today is a regulatory package which would conform the state's Title 14 regulations for waters 0 to 3 miles from shore to those federal rules for consistency purposes. The second part of the package in front of you addresses one commercial nearshore fishing change for Cabazon based on a new federal stock assessment that suggests the stock is healthier than previously assessed. So the Cabazon TAC that is presently in place in our Title 14 state regulations would be updated and increased to more than double the current value. It's presently 69 tons, and the TAC would increase to 148 tons as a result of your action later this fall. The recreational groundfish changes, the situation is a little more rosy in California relative to rockfish fishing because the impacts to yellow-eye rockfish, which is the most constraining of the overfish rockfish, our anglers have done much better at avoiding interactions with yellow-eye, and the incidental bycatch levels have decreased somewhat in the past few years, which allows some relaxation to some of the fishing regulations in many parts of the state relative to the fishing season. So I'll just quickly run through the major pieces of this package. On the recreational side, all of these things have already been approved by the Pacific Fishery Management Council for effectiveness come January 1st. The first thing would combine the current Monterey South Central Management Area and the Morro Bay South Central Management Area into one area, and that's for regulatory simplicity because those fishing seasons and depth constraints will be the same. We'd like to add a management line at Cape Vizcaino for possible in-season use. We are going to revise the naming conventions that we currently have in place in Title 14. They're a little bit cumbersome, and make them more simple. So we'll just have the northern area, the Mendocino area, the San Francisco area, the central area, and the southern area. We would eliminate the 10-fathom depth closure that presently is in place around the Farallon Islands and Noonday Rock. It's just an unnecessary regulation at this point with the institution of the MPAs. In Southern California, the sculpin depth restriction will be brought out to 60 fathoms when scorpion fish is open. The Cabazon and kelp greenling gear restrictions will be brought into being aligned with that for rockfish, meaning it would only be authorized use of one rod with not more than two hooks. For Cabazon, I mentioned that the TAC increase on the recreational side, that would allow us to increase the daily limit for Cabazon, the daily bag limit to 3 fish statewide. The lingcod seasons, similarly, we have a pretty optimistic picture on lingcod right now that allows for increased recreational harvest for lingcod. For all of the fishing modes, so we're proposing that we allow lingcod fishing consistent with all of the rockfish fishing seasons and in the shore-based periods, which shore-based is open 12 months a year, so lingcod would be allowed 12 months a year as well from shore modes. Another way we looked at to increase allowable harvest of lingcod is to recommend reducing the lingcod size limit to 22 inches from 24. With the corresponding 14-inch fillet links. The Calcod Conservation Area, a few changes there, also allowing a little bit of liberalization.
and increased access to some areas without without any increased impacts to cow cod. That's very important and was a very big discussion at the council and point of concern. The proposed changes would increase the recreational depth restriction in the CCA from 20 fathoms out to 30 fathoms, but would also incorporate the use of waypoints like we have for the other depth constraints. That's a different way to enforce the depth constraints that we use elsewhere. So we'd be moving to waypoints and away from general contour lines. Additionally, in the Calcott area, based on all of these are based on public proposals that have come to us over the past few years, but we would authorize the retention of shelf rockfish in the Calcott area as well. Right now, they're only allowed to retain the nearshore rockfish, but what happens is that when they are fishing for the nearshore rockfish, they do encounter some number of shelf rockfish, which right now they must release. So we would allow them to retain those shelf rockfish as well. And in total, I said the fishing seasons would become increased in several parts of the state. Just a quick rundown on that. The northern part of the state, would the season structure would result in 5.5 months of fishing, which is up from 4 months. The Mendocino area, that's where we have the highest yellow eye impacts. Right now, they only have a three-month season. Unfortunately, there was no wiggle room in that area because that is still, the Shelter Cove area is still where the primary impacts are felt. So that would remain 3 months. The San Francisco area actually will benefit with an increased season to 7 months. Right now, they're only at 4.5. So that's good news for them. The central area would go up to 8 months, increase of a month and a half for them. And the south is already open 10 months, and that would remain status quo. So that's the package in front of you, and we're just asking that the commission authorize publication of notice for its intent to amend those Title 14 regulations.
Okay, we'll go to public comment.
We have no public comments in Sacramento.
Santa Barbara?
We do. We have one.
Okay. We're ready.
Paul Weakland. Commissioners, Paul Weakland. Once again, when any report is given, the number of fishermen should be the first thing talked about. We know these numbers. Why do you keep camouflaging the true situation or status? The other thing is this cap is on, and this shows a fallacy in the TAC concept. Here you are again manipulating and micromanaging some of these things that nature takes care of on its own. You have increased the season. Where are all these scientists, the gloom and doom, the sky is falling, Chicken Littles now? Now they are heading for the hills because all of their grant sucking and you know, their survey methodologies are in scrutiny, and they don't want to have to deal with that, do they? That is all.
And that's it for Santa Barbara.
Okay. Do you have any speaker cards on this item in Ontario? Dan?
No, sir, I do not.
Okay. How about you, Mike, in Monterey?
Not in Monterey. I just have a quick question for Marcy.
Okay, Commissioner Sutton.
Marcy, I figured you'd be working in the General Counsel's office by now. Didn't you get a law degree between the last time you appeared before the commission and now?
Yes, I did, but I also became a program manager.
Congratulations.
Keeps
on
me
both
quite
counts.
Busy. Thank you.
Any more questions or comments from the commission?
Is that a motion?
Yes.
Okay, we'll hear... a motion from Mr. Fisher?
The suggested motion is that the commission authorizes staff to publish notice of its intent to amend recreational and commercial ground fishing regulations for 2011 and 12.
Motion?
So moved.
Okay. Second?
I'll second it.
Okay.
Who was
Dan, all right.
Yeah, it was.
Sutton moved and Dan seconded, I think.
Okay.
That's correct.
We'll have a roll call.
Commissioner Sutton.
Aye.
Commissioner Richards.
Aye.
Vice President Rogers.
Aye.
President Kellogg.
Aye.
Passed unanimously, 4-0. Number 6, receipt of Department of Fish and Game Director's Informational Report. We have with us Department Director John McCammon. Commissioners, I would like to call your attention to Exhibit 6 in your binder, which is the Department's legislative report dated July 19th. Other than that, Mr. McCammon.
We did get a July 19th ledge report. We don't have any particular updates on it today. We'll have a more comprehensive report at your next meeting when things will have settled out a bit. Right now, there's a lot of legislation onto the governor's desk, but we're not too sure how it's shaking out. But you also have in your correspondence file a August 3rd letter from the department to Mr. Pius Lee, who's been an advocate for the use of frogs and turtles and food products in the live animal market. You had previously given me direction in April, I think it was, to not issue any of the discretionary permits that are provided for under code. It was brought to our attention that taking a policy action like that would be perceived and would be liable for as a underground regulation and could not enforce it. Therefore, we looked at alternatives. A couple of things are going on. One is you've asked your staff, and Mr. Fisher has prepared a report, to bring back looking at all the alternatives, including going through a formal rulemaking to accomplish what you want to do, as well as other options. In the meantime, though, I am not able to take that policy direction explicitly to heart, much to my chagrin, and I am having to consider each of these permit requests on a case-by-case basis, as the law currently allows. Now, so what I've tried to do is to work with the importing community to identify mechanisms which would make the possibility of release into the wild of these frogs and turtles less possible. And basically the mechanism we've come up with is a couple things. One is making sure, and as a part of the permit process, that we would get the signage and all the information that goes with the distribution of the products from the importer to the retailer, because the problem is at the retailer, but we regulate the importer, and that's a disconnect that's important in this idea. The second thing, so we would want that signage, we'd want to know that they're doing that signage, which most of them do, but we would have that on record as part of our permit consideration. The other thing that we thought was important to do was to know where the retail businesses were that actually do distribute these things, and to be able to monitor, basically, the retail businesses instead of just the permit holders. Because, like I said, we have permit holders who are different than the retail outlets, and so we don't have any record of the retail outlets. The permit holders are now going to be obliged to provide to us their retail outlets. We're going to hire a scientific aide in that community to track all that and to keep it in the computer base, so we'll know where these things are being distributed, and we'll send him out and take a look around, and if he sees egregious violations, he can call a warden. And that's kind of the interim measure that I've decided in order to get myself out of this conundrum of having a non-enforceable direction from the commission, until you consider and do whatever other alternative you choose at your September meeting, John. I think they're going to consider.
With the commission's direction, we can probably have that queued up for September, yes.
Okay. So we're looking forward to that further discussion. In the meantime, this is the operational program that I've got to implement. I did send a copy of that letter to the commissioners so that you were aware of what I was doing.
Hey, John, this is Dan.
Yes, sir.
When you do issue one of these permits, is there a time line that the permit is issued for, is the first question. The second question is, once the permit's been issued and we change the rules and regulations, can I assume that that applies to all the existing permit holders immediately?
Yeah, no. The permit's issued under the current terms and conditions, so it's, and they're typically an annual permit. In this case, everyone has an annual permit. So they will get their permits under these revised conditions for the interim, and it'll be a year for those. We've already got 16 of them issued, so those will be up relatively soon after the first of the year. There, any more that are coming in now would be a year from the time of issue that your regulatory action would take place.
So if you issue permits today to someone,
right,
and we change the regulations in September,
right,
their permit is applicable for another year?
Yes.
The permit that you just issued?
Right, would be applicable for the year that it's issued, yes.
Okay.
Okay, commissioners, any other commissioners got a comment or question?
I do have one other report, if I may.
Okay. Director McCammon's going to continue on with his...
Well, if we're going to stay on that issue, then I'm sorry, Mr. President, I do have another comment. Then I'd like to know what our options are John mentioned an underground regulation or something like that. What do we do on an above-ground moratorium on issuing any more of these permits? What,
yeah,
what emergency action can we do right now to stop this so that we don't get a flood of these things between now and September that are then going to be valid for at least another year?
It would be your regulatory process, which is a three-month process that would take generation of a regulation. It would take a CEQA document. It would take public hearings, and you could adopt it no sooner than 3 months.
What would we need a CEQA document for, by the way, on that?
We're evaluating the impacts on the environment and for public disclosure purposes, which is largely what CEQA is for.
Mr. President.
Commissioner Sutton.
I just want to say to the director that I appreciate his position, and it certainly wasn't the intention of the commission to put him in a difficult position here, but rather to signal our feeling in terms of this issue. And I'm with Commissioner Richards in terms of the desire to proceed above ground with a regulatory process, whether it's on an emergency basis or not, remains to be seen, I suppose. But it seems to me that this issue is important enough to a variety of communities that we ought to deal with it expeditiously.
You do have a report coming before you on September from your staff, which will kind of outline the options, and you'll have an opportunity at that time to make a determination. And frankly, a piece of this is we all ought to be sitting around the table when we're talking about it rather than doing this telephonically.
Yeah.
Part of my thought, anyway.
Any other comments or questions from the commission?
No, not on that matter.
Okay.
Another matter that I want to let you know, automated license data has been come before you almost monthly for the last couple of years and has been a project of the department, I think I've been told, for 35 years, but has been actively engaged for 11 that I'm aware of. So the program is designed, up and running. We have gone through the approval process. The department has accepted the product. The equipment has been received and is in storehouse. And so user acceptance process is complete. We are currently training our own employees and selected licensed agents for 15 vendors, and that'll have more than some of those vendors have multiple outlets. Others are single mom and pop places where we take in a specialized computer and printer. They access our system and they can sell online. That's a pilot process. It will be implemented over the next 30 days. So we will have in 15 vendors, I couldn't get the exact number of locations, but it was near 200 locations in the state where we will be selling licenses ALDS. The full deployment of 1,500 locations for license agents is February 4th. So we will be at every
get them online now.
License agent on February 4th. Now, then the next issue is the a key one. We have online fishing currently available. To put the additional online stuff will take about another, it's going to be in place before internet sales for all fishing and all hunting will be before the next big game draw in June of next year. So we are on track to get this thing done, and I want to claim an accomplishment for the Schwarzenegger administration in prioritizing this thing and getting it done. It's a rollout process, but the product is good and ready to go.
I have a question, if I may.
I want to make a comment first, if it's all right, Richard. Just the fact that, you know, this has been a long, long, ongoing process through several directors of the Department of Fish and Game, and I think we'd be remiss if we didn't point out the fact the short time that John's been the director, how quick he got this done.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
No, I certainly agree with that.
But we've gone through four or five employees to get it done.
All right, go ahead.
John, I have a question, if I may. How long do you think it'll take for us to get in an electronic fashion, a rolled-up electronic fashion, things like abalone, lobster, commercial licenses, all kinds of things like that?
Yeah, the permits that we issued, you know, the special permits that are issued that are returned, and that's always an issue. But the ones that are returned will be entered into the system connected to the license. So the data associated with that will be available when the online system goes active. Now the question is whether it would take some time to accrue that data, but the data will be collected beginning when cards are returned in January.
Yeah, because right now, as I think we all know, there's nothing to stop some guy from, you know, getting an AB card and getting another one.
Don't say that in public, please.
I did.
Any other comments or questions? Okay. Well, thank you, John.
There's public commentary.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say we have no speaker cards in Sacramento.
Okay. Santa Barbara, speaker card.
Commissioners, Paul Weakland, there's a need to avoid being a messenger of deception. Telling half the truth is like telling a whole lie. Let's be accurate. Validate and verify everything. That is all.
Do you have any more speakers there in Santa Barbara?
No, sir, we do not.
How about in Ontario?
No, sir, we don't.
How about in Monterey?
Negative.
Not even a bark?
Yeah. Too lazy.
Thank you, John, for the report. We'll move on to item seven.
Number seven. Mr. President, commissioners, number seven is possible action on staff recommendation to hold the December 15th, 16th meeting in Santa Barbara. We have one speaker card here in Sacramento on that, but basically to summarize, the South Coast MPA proposals were originally scheduled to be discussed at the August Commission meeting in Santa Barbara and adopted at the October meeting in San Diego. But with delays in the environmental document and the ISOR, it's not possible to keep this timeline. Staff is recommending that the South Coast MPA proposals be discussed at October in San Diego and that the adoption hearing be rescheduled to December in Santa Barbara. By way of background, we have contracts in place for the September and October meeting facilities. Those contracts or those facilities will be paid for with an American Express account dedicated specifically for meeting these expenses. And what I'm trying to say is that we expect that that card is good and that the budget situation not affect us being able to use that card for the September and October meetings. We have not contracted for a facility for November yet. We're hoping to look for an area in the for a meeting in the Sacramento area, Lake Natoma Inn that we used in June. Again, the state budget does not get passed, and the American Express card becomes no longer in good standing. We have to get very creative in how we try to schedule the meeting. So we've recommended holding the meeting in December at Hotel Marmonte in Santa Barbara. We had contracted with them before for the August meeting. The contract had a clause said that if we cancel the meeting, we need to reschedule their facility by the end of the year or otherwise forfeit our room rental fees, which is pretty significant, $4,000. So that's the basis, commissioners, behind our recommendation. As I mentioned, we had one speaker card here. Do you have questions for us first?
Any comments or questions from the commission before we go to speakers? Okay, speakers.
Okay, Mr. George Osborne, and I want to point out to you that I think Mr. Osborne sent a letter on this to you also, and I think our staff forwarded that to you on or about the steam. Mr. Osborne, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. President, commissioners. And thank you, John, for the compliment for bringing you an easy one earlier. Figured this one would be equally easy. I represent the Partnership for Sustainable Oceans, and our request is very simple. We believe that the adoption meeting for the South Coast MLPA should be held in a location with a larger number of the population available to make that meeting, and such a location would be more properly in Los Angeles rather than in Santa Barbara, which is quite removed from the bulk of the population in the South Coast region. We believe that the location of the meeting is critical to public participation and public acceptance of the commission vote, and we urge you to consider our thoughts on this, and we appreciate your consideration. Thank you very much.
Are there any speakers at other facilities, commissioners, on this item?
Yes, this is Dan. Steve Fudo with the United Anglers of Southern California.
Thank you. President of the Commission, commissioners, Steve Fucuto, United Anglers of Southern California. We represent about 10,000 dues-paying and affiliate members, of which the population is vastly distributed from Santa Barbara down to San Diego. If you were to look at us demographically, I think we pretty much mirror the population. Basically, about 20% of the population is in Santa Barbara, Ventura, and northern L.A. County. And yes, that is convenient for Santa Barbara, and I love Santa Barbara. However, to address the concerns of our constituents, we would appreciate strong consideration by the DFG Staff Commission to move this meeting to a more central location on the South Coast. Generally speaking, someone from San Diego trying to get up to San Diego on a good day is 4 hours. If it's on a weekday, trying to traverse through LA Airport or downtown Los Angeles, it's going to take considerably longer. So with that, we ask you to take that in consideration when scheduling any meeting for Marine Life Protection Act on the adoption of South Coast area. Thank you.
Any speakers of any of the other satellite locations?
I do in Santa Barbara.
Okay. Go ahead, Rick.
Hello, this is Michael Sheehy with Santa Barbara Channel Keeper. Thank you very much for the opportunity to comment. I just wanted to commend the commission on identifying very physically responsible approach to meeting both the needs of adoption hearing in Southern California as well as the need to meet its budgetary priorities with maintaining the meeting in Santa Barbara. Just to speak on the point of representation, I think in this satellite room we have a good example of a very even representation of interests. Our community prides itself on having multiple interests represented, we feel that Santa Barbara is a real valuable and quite reasonable place to engage this discussion and look forward to that. Thank you very much.
Is that it in Santa Barbara?
Yes, sir, that's it.
Okay. Mike, you don't have any in Monterey, right?
Negative. No public comment here. I do have a comment of my own, Mr. President, if we're ready for that.
Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Commissioner Sutton.
I certainly support maximum public participation in our efforts. I think it would also, though, it's by the same token, be a mistake to assume that the only stakeholders for the MLPA in Southern California are people who live there. There are a considerable number of people from elsewhere in the state who are interested in this issue and are following it and intend to be at the meeting. So we can't forget those stakeholders either. And last time I checked, Santa Barbara was part of Southern California. Certainly we don't claim it as part of Northern California. So even though it's a beautiful place, Richard, almost as beautiful as Monterey. So I'm open to suggestion and the will, the pleasure of my fellow commissioners in terms of the location of these meetings. It is our tradition to locate decision hearings in places where the affected public can be heard. And so I have no problem with holding these meetings anywhere in Southern California, including Santa Barbara.
Any other comments or questions from the commissioners?
Well, the only comment I would have would be to not engage Commissioner Sutton in a who's got the more beautiful place to live. That's already been settled in Santa Barbara's favor. But I would point out that we have a deposit in, and we will lose that if we move it.
Yeah, that's the problem I see, too. I mean, just speaking for myself, and I want all the constituents there that we can get, but Santa Barbara's, it's close enough to make it work, I think, with the deposit that we would lose changing venues after that.
So. I agree.
Okay, if there's no more comments, we have a suggested motion that Mr. Fisher will read for us.
Sure. Move that the commission direct staff to secure a meeting location in Santa Barbara for the December 15th, 16th, 2010 Fishing Commission meeting. Or alternatively, if you've got another location in Southern California in mind. And then the second part of the motion is that staff is to secure a location in Greater Sacramento area for the November 17th, 18th meeting.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, got Sutton. Commissioner Sutton made the motion and Commissioner Rogers seconded it. We'll have a roll call.
Commissioner Sutton?
Aye.
Commissioner Richards?
I'm thinking about it. Hang on for a minute.
Upland was not in the question.
Possibly they may do it.
Yeah, Upland's a little prettier than you might imagine, actually. But anyway, I'm aye.
Okay. Vice President Rogers?
Aye.
President Kellogg?
Aye.
I have a unanimous vote again, 4-0 on this. And, Mr. President, I believe that all we have left on our agenda is a short executive session.
Oh, we got
not quite item
on. Oh, eight? No. I'm sorry.
We don't want to forget all of Craig Schumann's good work on rock crabs.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm
we
sorry.
We took that out.
Let me clarify that. Item 8 was on your agenda for August 5th, commissioners, and that was only needed if there were public comments on the continuation notice that was put out previously. Your staff put out the continuation notice. There were no public comments on item 8, so there's no need for a confirmation act on item 8 today.
It was removed
from this current agenda. Thank you, Adriana, for making that.
Okay.
So I was right the first time around that we don't have an item 8 for discussion. We do have
The rock crab decision, just to clarify, John, the rock crab decision we made in June, is that correct?
Yes.
All right. And that stands?
Yes, sir. Yes.
Right. So with that being said, we've already done the consent calendar, so it's time for us to excuse all our guests and go into executive session.
How long
we will come back?
Yeah.
We will come back after executive session and have a report on the results.
So, AGP, we will call you back when we're finished with the executive session. It's probably going to be a very brief executive session and report of results. So,
in the session, the commission took no action. They discussed the O'Leary litigation and the status of the search for a replacement for the executive director.
Okay. Well, do we have any public speakers at any of the satellite locations?
None in Santa Barbara.
None in Monterey?
None in Monterey.
Okay. That concludes today's commission meeting, and I will adjourn the meeting.
Thank you, sir. Santa Barbara.
See you soon.
Santa Barbara leaving.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Good job, everybody.
Thank you.
So, can you hang on?